wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you.
The transfer portal has officially closed for college football. That means anybody wanting to jump ship from any program is now going to have to wait until the month of May to do so. Maybe late April. I don't really remember when the spring transfer portal opens up, but everybody's locked in. If you're on a roster right now, you are locked in until that time. Now, there's still some guys out there who can jump out of the transfer portal, but no one can jump into it. For a while. That means spring sports are about to ramp up, and Oklahoma softball, number one team in the nation, back-to-back defending national champions. We'll get into a little bit of that, but we got to start with Bedlam basketball. The Sooners drop the game in Stillwater, 72-56, a 16-point loss on the road. By far, I think it's the, obviously it's the worst loss in conference play, but I also think it's probably the most demoralizing loss, if you will. You go in as a two-point favorite. You lose by 16 in a game that you absolutely, absolutely had to have to kind of equal out your record and so forth. 48-26, Oklahoma's outscored in the second half. Grant Sherfield was on fire the first half, 15 points. And you look like Sooners took, like, I think, a 6 or 8 point lead into the locker room, and you're thinking, man, these guys are rolling. I mean, they're rolling. This is going to be a good game, a good win. Oklahoma's going to catch one on the road, which they desperately need. And then Sherfield, 0 points in the second half. Tanner Groves was a non-factor scoring-wise. Now, to give him credit, he did grab 11 rebounds, which was a team high. But look, Oklahoma lost this game on several different levels. And I think you have to give Oklahoma State credit for two things. The first thing is the way they shot the basketball in the second half. To score 48 second, I mean, that's almost 50 points. To score 48 second half points against Oklahoma, the way that the Sooners have been playing defense this season. So you got to give them credit there. Just caught fire. And there's really, when that happens, particularly if you're playing on the road, when that happens and you're juiced by the home crowd, there's nothing as the visiting team that really you can do. I mean, those shots have not been falling for Oklahoma State all season long. I mean, one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the Big 12 haven't been falling, and they literally couldn't miss in the second half against Oklahoma. So you got to give the Cowboys credit for the way they shot the ball in the second half. But then I think you got to give them, by the way, Oklahoma 4 of 15 from three-point range, 26.7%. Not going to get it done, especially when your opponent is shooting the way Oklahoma State did in that second half. But I think the second thing, you look at what Oklahoma State did was they just got physical with Grant Sherfield. And I know it's the easy argument now when you talk about Big 12 officiating. Well, they get to shoot more free throws, and we only got one holding penalty called against us all football season. The Big 12's got it in for OU. Look, there may be some sort of credence to that argument. I just think it's become the easy way to explain your team's loss. I really do. Whether you're Oklahoma or whether you're Texas, I have said this all along. I said this before Oklahoma announced that it was leaving to go to the SEC, and I maintain this argument that across the board, officiating in the Big 12 is the second worst officiating in all the Power 5 conferences. I still think the Pac-12 is worse. I really do. I think the Pac-12 has more blunders than any other conference when it comes to officiating. But it was bad. The Big 12 officiating was bad before Oklahoma announced it was going to the SEC. And it continues to be bad. I just think we as Oklahoma fans have a reason to excuse losses or bad play. But they got physical. They got physical with Grant Sherfield, and he was 0-for in the second half. And when your star, when your key player is taken out of his game, off of his game, bumped around, someone else has to step up, and Oklahoma has nobody. And it's the second time this season we've seen this scenario play out. You remember the season opener against Sam Houston? Very similar situation. I mean, I think in Bedlam, OU had an 8-point lead at one point. They had a double-digit lead against Sam Houston, and then everything went cold. Everything went cold. Your star can't hit a basket, and then there's no one else. Tanner Groves, I don't want to hate on the kid. 11 rebounds is good, but you can't. If you're in the position that Tanner Groves is in, and when the team relies on you the way Oklahoma relies on this kid, 4 points is inexcusable. 4 points is absolutely inexcusable. Tanner Groves is more valuable to this team than 4 points. He's got to be close to a double-double. For this team to do what they need to do, Tanner Groves has to be close to, if not, a double-double every time he steps on the floor. And it's not like he was taking overly complicated shots. He was missing point blank. He was missing when he's wide open from three. He just wasn't there. It wasn't there. He was a non-factor scoring. And Mike Boynton knew that. They saw it in the first half. I mean, you're almost 30 minutes into this game before Tanner Groves scores his first basket. So it wasn't like, oh, this is a mystery. Let's take away Grant Sherfield and see what happens with Tanner Groves. No, they're looking at Tanner Groves. They're watching this kid play. And he doesn't have it. This guy doesn't have it. He's intimidated by the crowd. He's mentally not there. Whatever the reason is, he doesn't have it. So just make sure Grant Sherfield can't make any more baskets, because this guy's not doing it. And neither was anybody else, for that matter. And I don't want to use the term devastating, but this was a bad loss for Oklahoma. This is a winnable game on the road in the Big 12, and you got to get those. You got to get those. Because they're coming home now. 11-7 overall in the season, 2-4 in the Big 12 play. You're coming home now to number 21 Baylor, right? I don't think that loss in Stillwater knocked them off of the bubble, because I think the Big 12 gets a lot of respect for how good of a conference it is. Hands down, usually it's a debatable fact. It's not debatable now. This is the best basketball conference in the country right now. That has surpassed the ACC. You can't debate that. But man, that you got to have that game. You're further down the bubble now. You're not off the bubble, but you're further down. And it could have been worse. It really could. This could have been a home loss. And if it's a home loss, I think at that point you use the word devastating. But now it's a bad loss. And here's why. Because you're 2-4. You're coming home to play the 21st ranked team in the country. And you have to win that game. You have to win that game. You can't drop a game that you're favored on the road and come home, even though Oklahoma's going to be an underdog against the Bears. You can't come home and drop that. 2-5 suddenly puts you, remember, you don't want to be at the bottom two teams in a conference. Right now, those spots are occupied by West Virginia, 1-5, and Texas Tech, 0-6. You don't want to be a 9 or 10 spot, because 9 and 10 are definitely not getting in the NCAA tournament. 8, you're in the conversation. 7, you're in the conversation. 6, I believe you're a lock. Now you got to win. I mean, you could have kind of, taken a breath had you won in Stillwater, but there's no chance to relax. There's no breath. It's a situation where if you win Wednesday night in Stillwater and then you lose Saturday at home against Baylor, well, you lost the number 21 team in the country, but you're still sitting okay, because you just picked up another road win. But now that scenario is gone. There is no sigh of relief. There's no opportunity to catch your breath. You got to go out and you got to win. And it doesn't get any easier. It's at number 14 TCU and then number 14 Alabama are your next three games. So your next three games, number 21, number 14, and number 4, that lets you know how important that Bedlam game should have been for this team to win. Because you're easily by the end of January, this team could be looking at an 11-10 record. Easily. That is a very real scenario that for the rest of the month, they go 0-3. And man, you got to think at that point, what could have been, right?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, so we've got True or False coming up here in just a little bit. And once again, you guys did not disappoint. That said, we got to talk about softball for just a minute, right? Because, hey, we're big fans of Oklahoma softball, and I don't think it's possible not to be. And maybe you're just not into it, but, man, this is a team very well known, back-to-back national champions. This is a powerhouse. Powerhouse program. Pettigasso sitting on, what, 6 national championships? This could be historic in as Oklahoma has a chance to three-peat. And when you look at the Big 12 preseason poll, now it's not possible for a unanimous selection from the coaches because as a coach, you cannot vote for your own program. So the Big 12 preseason poll comes out. Oklahoma's by a landslide number one. Oklahoma State picks up one first place vote, and then it's Texas, Baylor, Iowa State, Texas Tech, and Kansas. So what that lets you know is that Pettigasso voted for Oklahoma State, and then everybody else voted for Oklahoma. It's as close to the number one team, a unanimously number one team in the conference, as you can get. And then when you look at the preseason selections for all Big 12, littered with Oklahoma. 7 of the 12 are Sooners. Jordy Ball, a unanimous selection. Alyssa Brito, Jada Coleman, Tiari Jennings, unanimous. Haley Lee, the transfer from Texas A&M. Grace Lyons, and I'm going to come right back to that. And then Sydney Sanders, transfer from Arizona State. The fact that Grace Lyons, who I have been saying for three, this will be the third season going into it, that I've said she is the best shortstop, not just in the Big 12, best shortstop in the country. The fact that she's not unanimous, that's a little bit bothersome. But again, it is what it is. This kid thrives on being the underdog. I mean, she doesn't care. She doesn't care what the Big 12 media or Big 12 coaches say. She's going to go out and improve with her play on the field, and she's done it for her whole career. And there's no doubt she'll do that again this year. But this team, as incredible as it sounds, this team should be better in 2023 than they were in 2022. And it's something we've talked about recently here on the podcast, but I want to delve into it a little bit deeper. Obviously, you lose Jocelyn Alloh, and hands down the best player in college softball last year.
But T.R.A. Jennings is going to be the best player in college softball this year. I'm convinced of it. And I don't think I'm alone on that. She was already groomed, right? I don't want to take anything away from Jocelyn because she was incredible, a fantastic ambassador to this program. But we would be remiss if we didn't say that Alo benefited from having Jennings in this lineup. And Jennings is going to be, well, now that Alo's gone, look, Jennings is going to benefit because you got Jada Coleman in this lineup. You brought in Haley Lee, who was an all-SEC first-team player, home run leader, single-season home run leader for the Aggies. You brought in Sydney Sanders, who was a Pac-12 freshman of the year. So this is going to be a potent lineup. And Patty Gasso always puts together a potent lineup, But I think even more so when you talk about just straight up home run power. And so what you do is you take what Jocelyn Alo could do by sending the ball into the parking lot and you distribute that amongst multiple players. So you've got Alyssa Brito, home run power, Jada Coleman, home run power, T.R.A. Jennings, home run power, Haley Lee, home run power. Grace Lyons, Sydney Sanders, home run power. You don't get to take a batter off. And so if you got a couple of these girls who can slap hit, which you do, how do you defend them? Because you put your outfield deep, right? Because of the home run power, you put your outfield deep, and then you slap hit underneath them, or you put them up shallow and you hit it to the fence. This is going to be a very, very, very difficult team to pitch to. You got a healthy Jordy Ball, a year older, a year wiser, a year more experienced. Nicole May, same thing about her. So I don't see how you can look at this roster and say, yeah, well, they definitely took a step back here from 2022. With all due respect, I mean, all due respect in the world to Jossie, this roster got better. It got better. And it's a lineup that no one's going to be excited to face with a couple of nasty pitchers. And I mean, Jordy Ball, she's got probably more swagger than any pitcher out there. And you saw what she did in the World Series when she got healthy. I think when you look at this team, the one question that comes to mind is this. Is it possible that the non-conference schedule that Oklahoma is going to face, is it possible that this non-conference schedule is more difficult than what they're going to face in the Big 12? And because of that, you may not see them go on the long winning streak like they did last year. Because of that, you may see them drop a couple of early games. But I think even at that, they'll be better suited for Oklahoma City at the end of it. I mean, you look at the Big 12, okay? You've got D1 softball's got their top 25 out. Oklahoma, number one. Oklahoma State, number three. Texas, number four. Those are your three teams. I believe it's a three-team race. I believe it's Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, Texas kind of on the outside looking in. And then you've got Baylor, Iowa State, who could very well make a push. They should have made a push last year better than they did. But Baylor, Iowa State can make a push to get into the NCAA tournament. So you've got two teams. That's six games against top 15 opponents in Big 12 play. Oklahoma goes to Stillwater. That's the final series of the season. They'll host Texas. Again, Cowgirls number three, Texas number 14 to start the season. But look what's happening in the non-conference portion of Oklahoma's schedule. Now, they'll start their season in 3 weeks at the Mark Campbell Invitational. That's in Irvine, California. They're going to face number 11, Stanford. They're going to face number 21, Washington there. Then they got number 2 UCLA. They got number 16 Kentucky. They got number 4 Florida State. They got number 7 Northwestern. They got number 19 Auburn. That's 7 ranked teams. 7 ranked teams on the non-conference portion of their schedule. And some of those games are multi-game series. I mean, they're going to play twice. So you've got about 10 games against 7 ranked teams on the non-conference portion of your schedule, as opposed to 6 games against ranked teams in the Big 12. And that doesn't include, like, you also got Wichita State on the schedule. You're going to make trips to LSU to play, the Tigers there. You're going to make a trip to Starkville, Mississippi to play Mississippi State. Texas A&M is on the schedule. And how much fun is that going to be with Texas A&M, Haley Lee, that whole connection there? But I think you can make an argument, a legitimate argument, that the most difficult portion of Oklahoma's 2023 softball schedule is the non-conference portion. And you're hands down the best team in the country. I mean, you are. You're hands down the best team in the country. No one is debating that. Literally no one is debating that. Even number 2 UCLA, they are not debating that Oklahoma is the number 1 team in the country. They're not. Now, they're hoping they can beat the Sooners, but they're not debating it. So you're the top team in the country. You're getting ready to move to the SEC, but really what this schedule sets up, not only to prepare them for the SEC, it prepares them for Oklahoma City. And that's all you want. If you want Patty Gasso and her squad to go into the Women's College World Series having faced some teams that they're already going to see. Oh yeah, well we know. We know what Stanford brings. We know what Florida State brings. We know what UCLA brings. And so on and so on. And you add Texas and Oklahoma State in there because I think they're very much in the mix for Oklahoma City. But one thing we've learned, if nothing else, one thing that we've learned about Patty Gasso is this. It is really, really, really difficult to beat her twice. We have seen that play out over the last several seasons where you may catch her once. You may beat her one time. But in that one win, what you're going to do is you're going to give her all the information she needs to make sure you don't do it again. And we saw that. We saw that play out over and over. Most recently we saw it at the Women's College World Series. So that said, you got to be excited about softball 3 weeks away. Mark Campbell Invitational when Oklahoma opens it up. Number 1 team in the country, but I mean, I think the argument that the Big 12 schedule is more difficult, that's way lesser of an argument than what you look at with this non-conference portion. That's the easy argument, in my opinion. All right, we got true or false. Let's jump into that.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, true or false time. This is where you get to participate in the podcast. Give us a statement. We'll tell you whether we believe it's true or whether it's false and the reason why we believe that way. You can participate a couple of different ways. Each podcast has its own post at heartland-sports.com. We can jump in there and leave a comment there, true or false statement. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at SportsHeartland. Those are the most common ways. You can also email us. We get a lot of emails. Heartland_sports@yahoo.com. Hit us up and we pick 5 or so each week, depending on how much news is out that week. And we typically pick 5 and we go with those. And so we've got them here. And once again, you guys were fantastic. Some of this is more recent. So we're going to start with Jennifer. Jennifer says, true or false, Spencer Sanders lost in the transfer portal. Now, you probably know this story, and this is the Sooner Nation podcast, but here we are talking about Oklahoma State. You know the story. Spencer Sanders leaves Oklahoma State, jumps in the transfer portal. He's rumored here, rumored there, but really doesn't land anywhere until he announces this week that he's going to go to Ole Miss, which, by the way, has Jackson Dart and has also picked up other guys out of LSU and so forth. So it is a collection of quarterbacks in Oxford for – I think about this, and if you're Lane Kiffin, I get it. I mean, look, you look at the situation Oklahoma has going on where you've got, you know, you got Dylan Gabriel. He came out of the transfer portal. You got – Davis Bevel, who came out of the transfer portal. You got General Booty, who came up from the junior college ranks. And really behind Dylan Gabriel, there was nobody. We saw that. That is a known fact. There was nobody behind Dylan Gabriel. And so when you're Lane Kiffin and you're just collecting quarterbacks, it makes sense from his perspective. From Spencer Sanders' perspective, I don't know that. I mean, the optics here don't look great. I think his mindset was, I can do better than what's happening here in Stillwater. But the reality is, what his value was and what his mentality was, I don't think was the same thing. Now, the truth is, we don't know, and we won't know until September, how this plays out for Spencer Sanders. But I've got some numbers here for you. Because there's the belief, Spencer Sanders, he's a four-year starter. He's got all this experience. He can run this offense. And Jackson Dart's still pretty young. He was a true sophomore, and he needs more time to develop. Okay, I'm not going to discredit or dispute any of that. But I will tell you this. Just based on 2022 alone, Spencer Sanders, 57.9% completion. Jackson Dart, 62.4%. Spencer Sanders, 2,642 yards. Jackson Dart, 2,974 yards. Spencer Sanders, 17 touchdowns. Jackson Dart, 20 touchdowns. Now, Spencer Sanders does have him beat in the interception department, and that's not saying much when we're talking about Spencer Sanders, but 9 interceptions for Spencer Sanders, 11 for Jackson Dart. There is not a clear night and day difference between Spencer Sanders and Jackson Dart. And then you consider the fact that Jackson Dart's already been in Oxford. He's already played one season for Lane Kiffin. Spencer Sanders, to me, does not have an advantage here. I don't get the move. I don't get it. Maybe it's monetary. Maybe he just was done in Stillwater. But he went, don't forget, he was the Big 12 preseason offensive player of the year. He was tabbed preseason back in August to be the Big 12 offensive player of the year. Now, there are guys out there like me who said that would never happen. And it didn't. But the fact is, I mean, if you're going to go one more year of college football, his bed is made in Stillwater. There is no quarterback competition. There's nothing there. Oxford, I get it. It's the SEC, and you want to try to test your merit against some of the upper competition in college football. But if there's a quarterback battle, it's not going to just be between Jackson Dart and Spencer Sanders. It's going to be a 3 or 4 man battle. And that just, again, that doesn't make sense to me. Because a lot of times, guys who do this type of situation are young guys. For example, Nick Evers, right? Nick Evers leaves Oklahoma. He goes to Wisconsin. Wisconsin brings in other quarterbacks. Nick Evers knows he's engaged in a competition that if he doesn't win, he's got time. I mean, redshirt freshman next year, so he's got 4 years of eligibility. Spencer Sanders does not have that. It's do or die for Spencer Sanders. And if you're trying to boost yourself to the NFL, go where you're already a legend. I don't know. Maybe if he wins that battle and does well, you think of guys like Matt Corral, who Lane Kiff has already put in the NFL. I don't want to say he lost in the portal. I don't, because we won't know the reality of this situation until September. But the optics don't look good. And I will say this, it appears at this moment on January 20th, 2023, 8 months away, it appears as if this is true, that Spencer Sanders did lose in the transfer portal. Bobby says this, true or false, Porter Mosier is not the guy. Okay, I get it. It's that instant gratification movement amongst sports teams. You gotta have it. You gotta have it now. At some point, we've got to have a conversation about what the transfer portal does to a coach's tenure. It used to be you could come in and you got 3 years. If you can't show me something in 3 years, then you're on the hot seat that third year, and if you don't have a turnaround, you're done. I don't think that's the timeline anymore. I don't think that's a fair timeline anymore. And you look at Porter Mosier's situation. He comes in replacing a legend, a Hall of Famer, and Lon Kruger. Immediately, you got guys who jump into the transfer portal, and they're gone. Guys like Brady Manick, you know, so forth. They're out. And then he does his first season with Oklahoma. And then that next wave of guys, Mo Gibson, Elijah Harkless, they're out. So the last 2 years, Porter Mosier has built his roster from the transfer portal, and he's really not had time to develop those guys that come in with his recruiting classes because everybody that was here is gone. And so, yeah, Porter Mosier's in year number two with Oklahoma. But he's had a roster turnover the first 2 years. I want to see Porter Mosier be able to carry roster from year one to year two. That didn't happen. I want to see him carry a roster from year two to year three. And hopefully that's going to happen. Hopefully we get to see that. But I think it's way too early. Way too early. Way too early to say that he's not the guy. Now, again, we already talked about Bedlam. We talked about what that was and what that meant to this team and what that means to this season. And so it's not going well from that perspective. But, man, I feel like it's not been fair to Porter Mosier at this point. I don't think we can say he is the guy. I don't think we can say he's not the guy. But if you're forcing me, Bobby, at this point, if you're forcing me, I'm going to say that this is false. You say Porter Mosier is not the guy, I'm going to say false because he's got a track record. He's shown he can win. Now he's got to show he can build a roster. And look, Milos Uzan, how can you not? I mean, you've got guys here that are showing potential. It's just the surrounding cast. He hasn't had a chance to get that developed yet. And I know you're probably saying, well, Matt, you're just making excuses. And maybe I am. Maybe I am. But the reality is, I think at this point, I disagree if you're thinking that Porter Mosier is not the guy. I think it's way, way premature for that. All right, Dave. Dave says this, true or false, Jeff Lebby is on borrowed time at OU. And I don't know, Dave, I don't know what angle you're taking here, because the answer to this question is true, but I don't know if you're taking it from an angle of performance where he's like, get the job done or you're fired. If that's the way you're going with it, then it's false, because he's not going to get fired at the University of Oklahoma for producing a top 25 offense and having the Big 12 offensive newcomer of the year. That's not going to get him fired. And you would think that they're only going to get better in year two of the Jeff Lebby offense. But it is true in as much as Jeff Lebby's not going to be a coordinator for a long time. This guy is going to get a job as a co-head coach, assistant head coach in waiting. Someone's going to come in and give him an offer he can't refuse and really put Brent Venables in a difficult situation. to either match that or move on from Jeff Lebby. And I don't know if this Alabama situation is going to pan out for Jeff Lebby. I don't know that Jeff Lebby wants this Alabama situation to pan out, but it shows a lot about what we, and I want to use we really loosely, what a portion of the Oklahoma fan base, how they see Jeff Lebby as opposed to how the college football world sees Jeff Lebby. Because you've got guys here at Oklahoma that are part of this fan base who are saying Jeff Lebby just needs to go. I mean, just, I've seen enough. I don't need to see anything else. Get rid of the guy. And then you've got the Alabama coaching staff who's like, you know what? We think he'd be a pretty good addition to our staff as the offensive coordinator. So it literally all over the place. But the reality is this, Dave, you're right. He's on borrowed time, and he was on borrowed time from day one. From the time he came to Oklahoma from Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin, he was on borrowed time. This was never going to be a long-term gig. And guys like this, they're not long. I mean, think about Bob Stoops. Think about his tenure, right? You had Mike Leach. You had Mark Mangino. You had Kevin Wilson. You had Josh Heupel. You had the guy we don't like to talk about, Lincoln Riley. And what did all of those guys do? None of them stayed for a long time. Mike Leach was only here for 1 year. I mean, 1999, that was Mike Leach. Mark Mangino was the offensive coordinator when this team won the national championship in 2000. But what did those guys do? Every single one of them became a head coach somewhere. Every single one of them moved on. And Jeff Lebby's going to do the same thing. It's not going to be because some people in the fan base want it differently. They would do it differently. But it's going to be because someone comes in, plucks him up, and makes him a head coach, or puts him as a head coach in waiting, or some sort of designation that he can't refuse in terms of what the trajectory of his career path is going to be. So Dave says, Jeff Lebby is on borrowed time at OU. I say that's true. Number four, here we go, Sarah. Sarah says, the Big 12 schedule debacle is just another reason OU needs to get out the door of this conference. She says out the door, but it's implied. And what if I told you this, Sarah? What if I told you that the Big 12 schedule debacle was because OU is getting out of the conference? There's a long list of reasons that you can use to kind of bash the Big 12. And there's a long list of reasons you can make for Oklahoma needing to pack up and leave this conference. The scheduling debacle is not one of those. And I don't even know it's a scheduling debacle, because here's what you have. You have four teams coming into the Big 12. You have two teams who are only going to be in the Big 12 for one season, and then they're leaving. And so what you've got to do is you've got to try, if you're the Big 12 office, you've got to try to coordinate this schedule where everybody's happy, but yet no one can be completely happy, right? That's the task at hand. And so you've got the newcomers. You got BYU, you got Cincinnati, you got South Florida, you got Houston. So Oklahoma is going to probably have to play all four of those teams next year. Texas is probably going to have to play all four of those teams next year. So who does Oklahoma play at home? Who does Oklahoma play on the road? For example, I think it's very much, and if you listen to the chatter, very much in the realm of possibility that Oklahoma takes road trips to Cincinnati and to Provo, Utah. I think that's very much in the realm of possibility. These new teams, they got to capitalize. They got to strike while the iron's hot, so to speak, because the other ones, you know, Oklahoma State and Texas Tech and Baylor or TCU or whatever, they've made their money off of Oklahoma and Texas being in this conference, because that is a guaranteed sellout. It's going to sound like a knock, but it's just truth. Stillwater, Boone Pickens Stadium is not a guaranteed sellout except for one game every other year. And that's the Bedlam game. And they've been very vocal. The Bedlam's over. It's over. It's dead, right? We don't want this anymore because they're leaving. That wasn't me. That wasn't OU. That was Oklahoma State saying that. Well, now the schedule thing's shaking out, and you got to get Oklahoma to Provo, Utah. You got to get Oklahoma up to Cincinnati. I really think Texas is going to go to Houston. I think that's what they want. That's a big, big moneymaker. So what do you do with Bedlam? Because if it's Oklahoma's last year in the Big 12, this would be the last Bedlam ever, and that was going to be in Stillwater. But you go back to this last Bedlam, you go back a couple months ago, and what was the Oklahoma fan, not fan group, but what were they saying, the players and the coaches? They were talking very much, go look up the quotes. Don't take my word for it. Go look at the post-game quotes. A lot of people in the Oklahoma locker room were saying, yeah, this is the last Bedlam. We came out on fire because we wanted to make sure that trophy stays here in Norman because this was it. Now Oklahoma State's, well, wait a minute. Well, we can get this one more payday. No, sorry, we gave your payday to BYU. And now you're going to go to Houston, and now you're going to go to Florida, now you're going to go wherever. So it's a big mess. But I don't think it's a reason why, and not just another nail in the coffin for the Big 12. I mean, the decision's been made. And what you're seeing with the schedule is a result of the decision that has already been made. So, Sarah, I think this is false. The Big 12 schedule debacle is just another reason OU needs to get out the door. I think it's false because OU is very much the culprit here in the debacle for the Big 12 scheduling. All right, last but not least, Marcus says this. Blake Smith is good depth. Maybe you mean, I'll just read it as it says. Blake Smith is good depth, but won't be a contributor. Okay, so here's what you're talking about. Blake Smith, Texas A&M transfer, tight end, 6'4", 250. He's going to add depth to this position that's losing. I mean, Braden Willis has been, he is Mr. Oklahoma, right? I mean, he's everything you want from a contributor on the field to a locker room type of guy. Blake Smith is going to add depth but won't be a contributor. I think if you're talking immediately for 2023, Marcus, this is true because Austin Stogner is your guy. I mean, soon as spring camp opens up, Austin Stogner, he's the guy. He is the tight end number one going into the fall. But don't forget, you've got a four-star guy in Caden Helms. You got Jason Llewellyn in there, and Jason Llewellyn has very similar size to Blake Smith. Blake Smith, 6'4", 250. I mean, so physically, he looks the part, but he only has two career catches. And I don't know how much you're going to rely on a guy to be your man when he only has two career catches. And you got another guy like Austin Stogner, who's already played at the University of Oklahoma, played at South Carolina, and now he's back at the University of Oklahoma. He has all of the experience. For everything that whole Spencer Sanders-Jackson Dart comparison is, this is not. There's nobody on the roster that has the type of experience that Austin Stogner has. So this is a no-brainer. This is Austin Stogner is your guy moving forward for 2023. And so, yeah, that's true, Marcus. If you're talking about only 2023, he's a guy that, I mean, think about Daniel Parker. And I know there were some personal issues there that got worked out. But this was all about Braden Willis in 2022 and Daniel Parker here and there. And you can see Blake Smith maybe here and there to get that experience. But this is Austin Stogner's team. No doubt this is Austin Stogner's team from that position. So, yeah, I agree with you, Blake. This is true that Blake Marcus, I agree with you that this is true. Blake Smith is good for depth, but he won't be a contributor in 2023. This is Austin Stogner's team. Hey, that wraps it up for this episode of the Sooner Nation podcast. Thanks again for everybody who listens and subscribes. If you like the podcast, hit us up, get us that subscription, give us a good rating. If you don't like the podcast, thanks for trying it out, and we hope you find something better out there because there's some good Oklahoma podcasts out there. I'm just thankful you came along for this one. Have a great weekend. Boomer Sooner. We'll talk to you.